From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Marky Ramone is my guest. He's an inductee of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, along with the band The Ramones, for which he was the drummer. He is one of the founders of punk rock, as well as a historian of rock, and he's just written a memoir called Punk Rock Blitzkrieg, My Life as a Ramone. Marky Ramone, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hey, thanks a lot. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
I guess you've been Marky Ramone longer than you were Mark Bell.
I think it's half and half. Yeah, I've been Marky Ramone longer, give or take a few years. But 78, that's when the name, started.
Do you think of yourself as Mark Bell or as Marky Ramone?
Well, when it comes to signing a bill, it's Mark Bell. when it comes to professional use, it's Marky Ramone.
Well, I want to thank you for writing such a great book. I really enjoyed taking the journey with you in Punk Rock Blitzkrieg. Your book is really a chronicle of the second half of the 20th century, and I could relate to a lot of it, like when you saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that event. Yeah, that's what started me off deciding to play the drums. It was Ringo. He was so animated that that's who I wanted to be.
And you basically focused on that, for the rest of your life. I mean, I always felt like that moment changed my life, although I didn't become a musician. But, the Beatles had a huge impact on me. But for you, it really, that was the moment where you became a drummer?
Yeah, well, I listened to other bands and songs on the radio, but that definitely visually changed what I became. The Beatles not only changed music, they changed, in a lot of ways, the world. We were coming off of the JFK assassination, and we were definitely in our doldrums here. So when the Beatles came out, it was kind of uplifting to everybody. And we embraced them, so did the rest of the world.
Do you consider Ringo to actually be an influence in terms of your drumming style?
When it comes to playing with fingers and wrists, yes. He had a style where he really didn't use his arms that much. He just used mainly his fingers and wrists. That's what I noticed when I listened and watched a lot of jazz drummers. They would do the same thing. So I was very influenced by a lot of jazz drummers and Ringo, Hal Blaine, Buddy Rich, Joe Morello from the Take Five album,
the Dave Brubeck
album, yeah. And I was always curious how they just went on, and I realized that it's a lot easier to play with your wrist and fingers than it is with your whole arm. Because you're doing all these eighth notes and shuffles and things, and after a while, your arm will definitely get tired. So I decided to adapt that style along with Tommy's into the Ramones.
Now, can you tell what's going on by listening to a record, or do you have to see a film of a drummer to know how they're doing it?
Well, you can tell by a record what they're doing, but visually it would be better. But I think using your imagination without the visuals can incorporate your own style with what the drum is doing on record.
When you were a little kid, you had a your own record collection. I know now, you bring your records to everybody. You have your XM, Sirius XM radio show, and you're a big record collector. But did you start your record collection when you were a kid?
Well, the first two singles I bought was Purple People Eater by a guy named Sheb Woolley. I always liked sci-fi and horror as a little boy, and I bought the Monster Mash single by Bobby Boris Pickett because he sounded like Boris Karloff singing. So, they were novelty records, but I really liked the drumming on them, and I took it from there. Then I heard the Ronettes, Be My Baby. Then I heard, I Want to Hold Your Hand, She Loves You, the Beatles. So you put that all together. Those are my early influences.
Yeah. So you've been on both, in terms of being in a rock and roll band, you've done it in both ways. That is, with Dust, for instance, you were kind of, that's a band that started organically, and you were part of the beginning of it. And then with the Ramones and some of the other bands you've been in, you were a journeyman who was hired to be in the band. How would you compare that experience?
Well, with Dust, we were friends in high school, and we formed a band, did two albums. We were one of the first heavy metal bands in America. With Richard Hell, we divided. He got half, and me, Ivan, and Bob Quine divided the other half. With the Ramones, we all got paid a salary, but in the beginning, Johnny, Joey, and Dee Dee, they owned the corporation, so they reaped most of the profits. But I get royalties off of every album, which escalated every year because I had a good lawyer who told me about all this, and including the merchandise. So if I wrote a song, I get publishing. If I didn't, I don't get publishing, but I do get part of the percentage of the sale of that song.
So, in other words, it's mainly a financial difference in terms of, either being hired to be in a band or creating the band? Or is there a creative or... you were in one band that you didn't really care for that much, Estes, is that what it's called?
Yeah, they were a very good band, not my kind of music for what their genre was. They were very good. I just didn't want to move to the Midwest. And I'm a New Yorker. I'm from Brooklyn, and I had to move upstate with them in Rosendale near New Paltz. And the summer was enough. I mean, it was a great mansion, Jaguars, Austin Healey's, swimming pools, the whole deal. But New York was my calling. And I stayed with them for a little bit. One of the main reasons was because of Andrew Oldham, who produced the early Rolling Stones, was the producer of the album on Columbia Records in 1973. So after Dust, that was my next shot, and then I decided to move on after Estes.
It's cool that both Dust albums are still in print.
Well, they re-released them on Sony Legacy, which is, I equate that with Warner's Rhino. So, they had them, released them. We remastered them, and they're unbelievable. That's the good part about technology.
Yeah.
The way they were mastered, unbelievable.
They sound great. The drums are really like the forward instrument in that band.
Well, I had room to move. There was a lot of areas within the songs that I felt as a drummer at the time in that particular band that needed some filling. So I just applied what I learned, and it worked out pretty good.
Some of those cuts you're still proud of?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Considering the fact it was 44, 43 years ago, and I was still a teenager.
Talking with Marky Ramone and the drummer from the Ramones, and he's just written this great book called Punk Rock Blitzkrieg, My Life as a Ramone. And even if you, listeners, are not fans of the Ramones, which is difficult to believe, but I guess there's some people who aren't, this is a fascinating book, and I highly recommend it.
Thank you.
Was it a natural thing for you in terms of going from the kind of heavy metal sound of Dust to Richard Hell and the Voidoids and the beginning of punk rock?
Well, being a New Yorker, I wanted to start hanging around the New York scene. So I knew the Dolls. Me and Johnny Dundas had the same birthday. We would celebrate. And that's what kind of started me getting into New York scene. The first drummer died. And then me and Jerry Nolan auditioned for the Dolls. And here I was coming off a very technical band, doing different time changes, not the straight 4-4-2-4. And there I was at the audition doing all these drum rolls, which weren't necessary within the songs. Jerry just played it straight, and he got the job. But that's what it was called for, and I try to play to a song. I don't want to overindulge in any song that doesn't need it.
So that was a valuable audition for you then.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, at that point, I started, after the Dolls, I joined the Wayne Jane County, and we formed a band, and I stayed with Wayne for about a year and a half, 2 years, and then Richard Hell approached me and asked me to join the band, the Voidoids, and me, Richard, and Bob Quine, got together and did the songs that were already written, and we hit it off. And that was the start of the Voidoids.
And you're on the first album, not on the second album, is that right?
Only the first one, and the EP that got us our record deal on Sire Records through Terry Ork. It was on Ork Records, 3-song EP. And then Seymour Stein signed us up on Sire Records.
Yeah, I was working at a record store when that EP came out, and That was a great record.
Loved it. Now I hear there's a record company that just remastered it a month or two ago called Roar, R-O-R. So when I first heard it, I thought it was a little thin. But now I hear it sounds 10 times better. So I gotta pick it up somewhere.
So what about those early days at CBGB's? What was the scene like there?
Well, it was great. It was our home. Every band there, I felt, used CBGB's to hone their skills, including the Ramones, Blondie, Talking Heads, Television, Patti Smith, and Wayne County. And we would keep going back and back and get tighter and tighter. The more you play, the more you learn. And New York City at the time in the mid-70s was very downtrodden. There were a lot of homeless people, unemployment, there were strikes, political unrest, obviously, because of Watergate. And Gerald Ford, who wasn't elected, telling the city to, take a hike.
Drop dead.
And we were in the midst of it. And we were lucky to have a place like CBGB's because a lot of clubs didn't want to play our genre of music because it was so new. And we were up against disco, the height of disco, and stadium rock and soft rock. So one night Blondie would be playing, and then the next night the Ramones. But there was a camaraderie, and we all knew we sounded different. There was no reason to compete. So we all respected each other's bands.
There were some really late nights, though. You guys didn't go on stage till very late.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days when clubs stayed open till 4 in the morning.
I remember being at CBGB's, and John Cale and Nico were going to play. And I don't know, after about, I think we left at about 3 a.m., and Nico had yet to have played.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, probably, you know, that happened a lot of times. But that's what it was like then. And then from there, 4 o'clock, we would go to an after-hours club.
And then you sleep all day.
And sleep all day.
Well, we're talking with Marky Ramone, and for 15 years he was the drummer. 15 years, is that right?
Yeah.
Drummer for
15.
The Ramones.
Yeah.
And so talk about how you got drafted into the Ramones.
Well, they used to come see my bands play before they were the Ramones. They loved us. And until I joined the group, that's when they told me this. Now, I'm not saying this is true or it's or false or whatever, or it's a coincidence. If you see the back cover, if you see the first Dust album, I'm wearing a leather jacket, and you see the front of the Dust cover, it is a brick wall. So I'm not saying it has anything to do with anything, but they love the group. And then when Tommy decided to leave unexpectedly, he wanted to produce. So he laid it on them, and he suggested that I be the drummer of the group. And then he told Dee Dee, if he saw me at the bar at CBGB's, which I frequented a lot, to ask me. And I said, well, let's get together, do 3 or 4 songs, see how it works out. And we went to a rehearsal studio, and it worked out fine.
So you had split with Richard Hell at that point, or that's
oh,
where
yeah,
you split?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We did a Clash tour. We went to England to tour with the Clash. The Clash wanted us to tour with them for 4.5 weeks, October and November, and of 77. But Richard had a drug problem, and it was very difficult on the road to obtain anything. Obviously, it's a lot easier when you live in New York City and you know your connections. But, you know, he's drug sick, and when he got back, he didn't really seem to want to tour anymore or as much. I did. That was part of the dream. So I left the Voidoids, and for about 2 or 3 months, I was in a quagmire. And then they contacted me, Dee Dee, and then Johnny, and then I ended up doing the rehearsals, and I became Marky Ramone.
Now, there's some pretty, and I'm only basing this on what I read in Punk Rock Blitzkrieg, there's some pretty bizarre personalities among the Ramones there.
Oh, you said it, including myself. If I write about anyone's personalities or quirks, I will write about mine. Everything's in there, and we were definitely a bunch of unique individuals. I would say to the extent that we were more like aliens from another planet. And that's probably what made the group so great, because they say opposites attract, and we were definitely opposites, whether it came to politics, things like musical differences. It was mainly politics and sports, and John was a big sports fan, and this was all in our trusty 15-passenger Econoline Ford van that we would tour the United States in, which I did 1,700 shows.
Wow.
So the validity of writing this book, is definitely there. And I had to be very brutally blunt in this book, because there were a lot of rumors that I wanted to to end about certain things that I hoped I did. That's why it was another reason why I wrote the book. I'm not knocking any of the other books that are out there, but this is the most comprehensive one.
I can understand wanting to set the record straight. And I guess, you know, maybe it's easier to write the book, although it's very sad that none of the other Ramones are living, but I guess it might have made it a little easier to write the book that way.
Well, the thing is that I wanted to do this 5 years ago. Tommy was still alive. You never know what sparks you off. I didn't write it because the other three died. I decided to write it because I just wanted my story out there opposed to other people's versions of what happened. So I thought about this about 5 years ago, and this is the result. You know, I didn't wait for anyone's deaths. I didn't. I don't think writing a book should be of anyone's vendetta towards each other. I think it should be an honest situation because you have to live with it.
Well, it feels honest to me. I had a guest here a while ago, Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers.
Ah, he's great.
He's great, and you guys share something in common in that you've both been produced by Phil Spector.
Yeah, Phil remained my friend to the end. Phil, I guess the most famous and greatest American producer concerning what he had to work with. In those old songs, there were only two or four tracks. So he really was a genius when it came to mic placement, to producing, having 25, 30 people in one room and making that wall of sound. So with us and Phil together, it was an experiment. Two walls of sounds colliding, and that was the result in the century. So there were very good songs on that album, but I had to get used to the two walls of sounds together. Phil never worked with a band like the Ramones before, and we never worked with a producer like Phil. So yeah, there were a few animosities in the studio. He never pointed a gun at us in the studio. That's just rumors. They did meet him another time, where he probably might have pulled a gun out on them, but not in the studio. We're talking about the studio here.
Right.
And Johnny Ramone said in a tape, referring to Phil, that what are you going to do, shoot me? Because they had a verbal confrontation, and in that tape, Phil's not holding a gun to his head. He just knew that Phil had guns on him, and he had a license to carry. It doesn't mean he would point a gun at him. The problems were is that Phil worked very slow. The Ramones were a very hyper people, so we worked quick on an album. But that was mainly the tension, was the work ethic. So we just weren't used to it. So Johnny and Dee Dee didn't like it. Phil didn't like them. But me and Joey and Phil got along just fine.
You know, sometimes Phil would not release the record at all, right? I mean, you were lucky that the end of the century ever came out.
Yeah, I know he did things like that. And he did fire around in the ceiling with John Lennon.
Yeah.
And I think there was a problem with Leonard Cohen.
He held a gun to his cheek or something like that.
Yeah, but me and Phil and Johnny, Joey, and Dee Dee were all basically from New York. Phil's from the Bronx. The other guy's from Queens. I'm from Brooklyn. I've seen that so many times when I'm growing up in Brooklyn with some guys I knew and still know. And It didn't scare me. It didn't intimidate me. It might have intimidated the other guys, but you know, I saw a lot of that stuff.
And you know, I think the fact that Phil Spector was known as a gun toter, you know, probably helped to convict him. But you're convinced that he's innocent.
Yeah, I think that was the reason. I'm not knocking the justice system, but. You know, they needed someone. O.J. Was found innocent. Robert Blake was found innocent. And that's the way the jury saw it. With Phil, if he was found innocent, I think a lot of people in Los Angeles would have lost a lot of trust in the justice system there. So I think they had to make an example.
End of the Century, the album that he produced for the Ramones, has sort of turned out to be the Ramones' most popular record.
Yeah, at the time, it definitely was our largest selling album. Great songs on there, Rock on High School, Rock and Roll Radio, Chinese Rocks, a lot of good gems. Recently, the first one went gold after 40 years, so 39 years. I wouldn't yell that from the rooftops, but usually an album, in my opinion, goes gold 3, 4, 5 years after, or maybe even the second year, depending on what band it is. But after 40 years, you can say better late than never, you know?
Well, that's a pretty wonderful thing to have, make a record that's, you're thinking of it as an immediate thing, and 40 years later,
right,
people are still treasuring it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they weren't around to see that album go gold.
Tell us a little bit about being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
We were inducted in 2002, we were amongst our peers. We were very grateful to be representatives of our genre of music, and it was a great night. Unfortunately, Joey wasn't there. That's why Green Day played the Ramon songs, and we were very grateful that they were on board to do that. And on the stage, John said his thing, thanked George Bush, which I thought was inappropriate at that moment because I didn't understand that. He had nothing to do with his career. And Dee Dee thanked himself, which was great. Joey wasn't there. I said what I had to say, but there was one statue on the stage stayed on the podium, and that was Johnny's statue, but Johnny took Joey's statue, and Johnny's statue was on the podium, so I think Charlotte, Joey's mother, had somebody get the statue for her, and then they exchanged the statues once they got off the stage between Johnny and Joey. And after that, I didn't hang around. I just went to an Italian restaurant, met Phil, and hung out with Phil.
That's cool. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'm not in there.
Well,
maybe
can visit.
I can visit. But I really want to thank you for this fantastic book. It's called Punk Rock Blitzkrieg, My Life as a Ramone, and the author, my guest, Marky Ramone. Thank you so much for spending some time
anytime.
With me.
Anytime.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see me again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Marky Ramone, a.k.a. Mark Bell, author of Punk Rock Blitzkrieg, My Life as a Ramone. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.